This is Jim Inkster, and welcome to Talk Louisiana. Hope you had a great weekend, and we start the week with the opening of the regular legislative session at the state capitol as Governor John Bel Edwards addresses lawmakers in a few hours. With us to talk about it, Jan Moeller, director of the Louisiana Budget Project. His group monitors and reports on state government spending and how it affects Louisiana's low to moderate income families. Jan has been in his position for 5 years, 9 years as a capital reporter of renown with the New Orleans Times-Picayune. Jim Richardson is also with us, and Jim Richardson is a man generally recognized as the person who knows the budget better than anybody in the state. Dr. Richardson still teaches at LSU with distinction and has served from 1987 to the present, that's 30 years, as the private economist on the Louisiana Revenue Estimating Conference. His panel is assigned with the constitutional authority and responsibility to provide official revenue estimates for the state. Your numbers, 877-217-5757, wherever you may be. And if you're dialing locally, you can dial 297-5633 in the Baton Rouge calling area. You can also send us an email at talk@talklouisiana.org. Let's start with you, Dr. Richardson. Right now, the governor is touting an ambitious tax plan. He's got a lot of heavy lifting to do, but it's a start. Who knows where we'll finish in 60 days, but you've been here before. How does it look right now?
Well, I think there are several things that people will recognize in the tax plan. That is, like, we're talking about the sales tax, and we've talked about the sales tax a lot in our fiscal history here in Louisiana. He wants to remember in 2016 when he became governor, there was this large deficit we had to very quickly make up, find some cash that we could get very quickly. We increased the sales tax, the state rate, from 4% to 5% on the traditional sales tax base. They expanded the sales tax base to include items that had been exempted, varying rates of taxation, not all the same. And all that was done under a temporary method, saying they will all expire as of June 30th, 2018. And part of that, at least the motivation was, we will get rid of these taxes because we want a real tax reform. And that's when they suggested the panel put together, and which the Secretary of Revenue was co-chair along with myself, and we were supposed to give them some suggestions for permanently solving their problem. So the sales tax is one that he has on his agenda, and in that situation, he's pretty much followed the line the task force recommended. That is, he wants to get the rate back down to at least 4%. He would like to also expand the base to include, to keep the items we included in 2016, but make them all taxed at the same rate, and also to add some services. And the service industry is by far the fastest growing part of our economy, and that's true nationwide. And it's also the one that is probably the most protected against sales tax imposition, because the rules are that the service has to be specifically listed in the statutes before it is taxed for sales tax purposes.
All right.
So it's a very hard, high thing. So, and the next, the other item, the task force recommended the income tax. And now the issue, and I think everybody can understand, you talk about income taxes, people obviously get very nervous, and legislators say, let's talk about something else. And he has put some suggestions on the board for the income tax, which would make it a little bit more progressive in nature, but it was not going to raise much money. And then he's adding a new element, and again, I have not seen, I don't know if anybody's seen the exact language or been discussions of the commercial activity tax, and he's going to work on that as a substitute for or as a limiting feature in terms of how corporations can work around taxes by how they can manage their books in Louisiana compared to other states.
Okay, so, hold that thought. I want to get Jan Moeller on that, especially the commercial activity tax. And once again, your number is 877-217-5757 for Dr. Jim Richardson and Jan Moeller, director of the Louisiana Budget Project. And Jan, the governor is playing with a very weak hand when he needs two-thirds approval in the House and Senate, and he's only got 13 votes from his party in the Senate and 41 in the House. And this commercial activity tax is one that was an eye-opener. Is it dead on arrival, or does he have a shot at convincing enough Republicans and Democrats to go along with his idea?
Well, that's a very good question, Jim. I think that's the billion-dollar question hanging over the session. And at this point, it's too early to say. The one thing I think we can be sure of is that they are not going to cut their way to a balanced budget. They can maybe do that this year, but next year, when all of these taxes expire, when you have this $1.4 billion budget cliff, we are not going to be able to cut our way out of that. There's going to have to be some tax votes taken. And right now, I don't think there are 70 votes in the House for anything, not for extending the sales tax breaks, the sales tax and the tax credit rollbacks from a couple of years ago. There's nothing from the governor's package right now. I think that has 70 votes. When we haven't seen a plan from the Republican side, who keep talking about budget cuts, but we haven't seen what kind of things that they want to cut out of the budget. And I don't think there's 70 votes or even 53 votes for that. So I'm not going to say anything is dead on arrival. Certainly, the commercial activities tax was introduced pretty late in the game. We've only known about it for a couple of weeks. There's still a lot of research being done on it. But one of the things you hear consistently from people on the left and the right is that corporations find ways to evade or avoid paying the corporate income tax, and that this CAT tax, which is modeled on something that Ohio's had in place since 2005, would make more corporations pay something into the system, and that would make up for some of the revenue that would be lost if we roll back this one penny increase in the sales tax. So I think we have to look at not just the taxes that the governor's talking about increasing, but also the ones that would roll off. Right now, we have the highest combined sales tax in the entire country in Louisiana. This is not an area where you want to be number one. So I think there's probably bipartisan agreement that we need to roll this penny off and find a better way to structure our tax system. And if the commercial activities tax is a part of that, hopefully legislators will give it a look.
Now, Jim Richardson, I noted you've been head of the Revenue Estimating Conference since its inception in 1987, and you've been through other...
Let's be careful, not head. I mean, been a participant, okay?
Okay. There have been other budget problems through those years. It seems that it's as though it ebbs and flows, and it inevitably happens. But is this one as extreme or less extreme than previous budget shortfalls?
Well, I think the closest this comes is probably back in the late 80s when Governor Romer had to take over under a very, very severe budget shortfall in which state really had cash flow problems. We have not had cash flow problems. So right today, unless we do something, we could have them. And I think the real element on as of right now is there are ways to solve this problem. And they have plenty of time to solve it right now. The only way that would make it really absolutely severe would be if they just refused to do anything, and they would have to wait for then it have to be a special session. I think, as Jan said, let's say this session right here, they do nothing at all except pass the budget. We'll make it through June 2018. But then in July 2018, when we start the next fiscal year, there's no way they can cut $1.5 billion out of the budget and get agreement on that. And I don't think they can really do that unless they really say, we're going to shut down all the universities, we're going to do this or that. They just don't have any choices, to be honest. So I think they have to come up with an alternative plan, a tax plan. Now, will they come up with it during this session? Ideally, they will solve the problem right now for the next 5 years, 10 years, if they do it. But, again, this is political atmosphere. It takes two-thirds votes to do the the tax, any tax measure, really, our most, for most tax measures, a very high hill to climb. And we'll see. And of course, you have different philosophies. You have different perspectives in the House on what's important, what's unimportant, what type of tax is good, what type of tax is bad. And I think this is where it's going to be very, it's going to take incredible leadership on the part of the governor. And at some point on the part of the House members and Senate members as well, they have to become a real team. And we find out if that happened or not. But no, this is a, I think this is an issue where the answers are fairly obvious. It's the political will to do it.
A bit more time with Dr. Jim Richardson, who's charter member of the Louisiana Revenue Estimating Conference, and Jan Moeller, who for the last 5 years has been director of the Louisiana Budget Project. Talk at talklouisiana.org is where you can send us an email, and we do have an inquiry from a listener about this gas tax that's being floated by none other than Steve Carter, who's a Republican. 17 cents. Others have bills that are less than that, but Jan Moeller, do you think that lawmakers might actually go for this particular tax?
That's another good question. We'll have to wait and see. I think the one thing we can all agree on is that our roads and transportation in this state needs an upgrade. There, we have a $13 billion backlog of repairs. Anybody who drives in the Baton Rouge area knows that our infrastructure is not modern enough and large enough to handle the number of cars on the road. And we also should realize that the last time the gas tax was raised was in 1990, and that the gas tax has lost over half of its purchasing power since then. So just to catch up where with where we were 27 years ago mm-hmm. is going to require quite an increase in that gas tax. Prices right now at the pump are fairly low, so if there's ever a time to do that, I think it's this session. We also have a lot of groups that have come out in favor of this, groups that normally aren't wild about taxes, like Chambers of Commerce in Baton Rouge and Lafayette, are all getting behind this. So if it's ever going to happen, I think it's going to be this session.
Jim Richardson, is there the stomach for a tax of this kind?
Again, I guess I was surprised. John was talking about the people who've been in support of it. I was surprised at the number of groups that came out opposed to it, saying we should rework our spending first on that side. But I think people need to realize on the gas tax that has been dedicated, and as John said, the value it's a per unit tax, so that means it goes down each time inflation goes up. Its purchasing power goes down. And the other thing is, everybody should think back about the car they had in 1990 and the miles you got per gallon and the car you have today and the improved fuel efficiency. So that's another thing that means that I don't pay nearly as much in gasoline taxes today as I did in 1990, yet I still use the same number of roads or I drive even more. So we've got to come up with a method of paying for our roads and infrastructure, and this right now, the gas tax is the best method we have, and I think we have to go back and increase it every once in a while. I think it's been since 1990, so it's 27 years, so this might be the right time to do it. I think the interesting part about that is if they got to worry about taxes on the regular budget side, which the governor's worried about, they would have looking at an extra tax on this gasoline for infrastructure purposes. So you're going to have, it's going to be a lot of tax talk during this session, and I think that makes a lot of people nervous. But the other thing about the gasoline tax they have to worry about is if indeed at the federal level they really start doing a lot of infrastructure spending there, sometimes that takes a match or at least mm-hmm. a contribution from the state. And if we don't have a contribution to make, the money's not going to come to Louisiana, the federal money. So we have to, in that situation, it's kind of an interesting process of trying to say, okay, we need to have extra money for upgrading, and also we're trying to invite some of the federal money to come here as well.
Now, former Treasurer John Kennedy, he held that position for 17 years. Now U.S. Senator John Kennedy has stated for years that we could get to where we need to be as a state with a budget by simply cutting, and that is the way that should be utilized to get us to prosperity. Is that practical, or is Senator Kennedy perhaps exaggerating, Jim Richardson?
Well, let me say, in 2010, there was a study done that focused on cutting everything, and they came out with 258 recommendations, and these recommendations that a group of people said that you can do this and cut something. And indeed, we had a Republican administration, a Republican legislature, and they had the ability to do that during those 8 years. Okay, and then in 2014, there was another a study done by a New York firm saying that these are things you can cut too. So, I mean, we've had opportunities to cut over the last 8 years, and so far we've not, apparently we have not done enough. But then if you're going to say that, I think Jan suggested this earlier, you really need to be specific. Exactly what is it do you want to cut? And the even issue there is they say, well, we're going to cut health care, too much health care. But most of that, or a great deal of that, is federal money. So it's not really our dollars. Our dollars have gone up a little bit, but it's really federal dollars that we're talking about in that situation. So if we cut health care, you're really talking about cutting hospitals, clinics, doctors, nursing homes. That's what you're talking about cutting. Well, once you start talking in that framework, it's not too popular then. You say, well, let's cut education. You're cutting elementary, secondary education. Are you cutting higher education? I mean, everything becomes very, very sensitive at that point. And so I think, so we certainly should try to be efficient. We should work very hard to make the budget just as small as possible and get the most out of it. That should be a continuous resolution of the legislature, and that should be regardless of their party, Republican or Democratic, period. They should try to do that. But I think when you start talking about we're going to solve this by cuts, you can cut $100 million, but there's no way you can cut $1 billion out of the budget. There's absolutely no way you can do that and still have any type or semblance of what you call public services at the state level.
All right. How do you see it, Jan?
Well, I'm going to echo a lot of what Dr. Richardson said.
Well, what about these consulting contracts that Senator Kennedy keeps referring to?
Again, the largest consulting contracts out there pay for things like administering the Medicaid program and things that we really cannot do without. So I'm sure that you can find a couple of contracts in the state budget that some would consider frivolous, but there's just simply no way that we're going to cut $1 billion or $1.4 billion out of the budget without serious pain being felt by healthcare, education, social services, the things that we spend our money on. 90% of the discretionary general fund dollars, this is the money that the legislature really controls, goes to healthcare, human services, and education. That's where the money goes. And so if you're going to make the cuts, that's where it's going to be. Lance Harris, the leader of the House Republicans, was quoted in the paper a couple of weeks ago, said, well, we had a retreat. We decided we don't want anything to do with taxes, and we're going to do this on cuts, and we have a secret plan. We're not going to tell you what the plan is. That's simply not going to work. If you have a plan to cut the budget by $1.4 billion, you should put it on the table. But the reason we haven't seen it is because it would lead to the kind of cuts that the people of Louisiana would find unacceptable. And we have proof of that in the poll that came out from LSU just last week, the Louisiana survey, and it showed that 71% of the people of the state favor a balanced approach to the budget that includes spending cuts but also tax increases, and that a majority of the public is willing to pay higher taxes if it means supporting education and health care and transportation. So the public understands this. The people who have studied our tax structure, people like Dr. Richardson, but also folks on the right like the Tax Foundation, and everybody who has looked at the tax structure understands that we need some structural changes. The problem in Louisiana is a political one. There is not the political will right now, at least not by two-thirds of the House, to make these difficult decisions. But the folks who have really looked at this outside have reached more or less the same conclusion.
Jim Richardson and Jan Moeller with us for a few more minutes. Jim Richardson, the longtime voice of reason, the economist on the Revenue Estimating Conference, and John Moeller, director of the Louisiana Budget Project. And he covered the Capitol prior to going to his current job for 9 years with the New Orleans Times-Picayune. 297-5633 in Baton Rouge, or the email where you can send comments or questions is talk@talklouisiana.org. Now, it's been 8 months since we had the historic flooding from 2016, and the website is now open for business, restore.la.gov, in which people can go and make all their applications for flood relief from the government. And Congressman Garrett Graves and others on Capitol Hill have accused the governor and the state of dragging its feet and getting help for the people who have been afflicted by the flood damage. The governor says he's doing everything he can, and he doesn't have any money in the bank because the federal government has not dispersed the funds. Now, Garrett Graves says that the funds are available. And last Friday on another show that I host, in a conversation with Leo Honeycutt, Garrett Graves made this comment in a startling statement from the congressman about who's right, who's wrong.
Michelle? If the federal government is the impediment in this, if the federal government is the impediment, then I will resign my position if the governor agrees to do the same thing, meaning if the state is actually the impediment, meaning if the ball is in the state's court right now, then the governor resigns his position. I will take that deal to let you know how right I am, how serious I am. I'm not going to sit here and play games with the governor. The facts are the facts. I can't make it any more true. The state of Louisiana, the governor of Louisiana, is the single impediment between flood victims getting their money and recovering or not.
Now, what do you think of that, John Moeller?
That is a remarkable statement. If I were a betting man, I'd say neither Congressman Graves nor the governor will end up resigning over this. But I think it's a shame that this has devolved into a partisan spitting match between two officials who really need to find a way to work together. I've only been in Louisiana 14 years, but I've been through a few disasters. I've never seen one yet where people thought that federal money was getting to victims quickly and efficiently. I think that is a characteristic of almost every disaster, that people, flood victims, wait too long to get this. I'm not qualified to say who's right in this fight, but I do think that this should be one area where partisan politics and ambition gets put aside and people find ways to work together, even if they don't exactly like one another, because yelling at each other like this is not helping flood victims.
What if the governor takes him up on this?
I don't think either one of them is going to quit their jobs over this. Somebody may lose their job over this if the money keeps getting held up. Again, mm-hmm. I've read the back and forth. I'm not a reporter anymore, so I don't really know who's right in this. And so, you know, both sides have made their case in this, but I really think that with so many people still trying to get back on their feet from this flooding, they need to find a way to work together instead of lobbing the spitballs at each other like they've been doing for the last few weeks.
This is more like a grenade than a spitball, but that's serious when politicians start talking about resigning their post, Jim Richardson. And the congressman, he's quite adamant. I firmly believe he thinks he's right, and the governor thinks he's right. Based on what you know, who is right?
Well, first, there is a long process to get federal assistance. And you have to go through certain steps. And I think the governor has worked very hard to go through all of those steps. And the other thing is, we applied for money at first, and it was about $450 million. Then we come back and we got an extra $1.2 billion, I believe it was. But all of that is just getting in paper right now. And then the government will give us a line of credit in which we can use that to provide to individuals. But the state really cannot get that money until the federal money is as line of credit. And we don't have the ability to kind of come back and back up and say, well, we've got a little money in the bank. We can up front this money early. And I think you Representative Gray's statement, you read it very carefully, very, very well done in what he said. But I think the money is not necessarily absolutely available right now that we can use. And I think the governor's team is trying to put together a process by which, once that money does get there, we can put it out as fast as the state can. So, I'm sorry they have decided to have this argument so publicly, because both are obviously very effective officials. I think when they need to work together, and I know the governor felt very like he was set up. We went to Washington on Thursday, I believe it was. He responded in that. I think now Representative Graves is responding to him. But I think the real issue is there is no way that if you have a disaster like we had in August and you start applying for federal assistance, there is a long process that you have to go through. It has not come fast. And a lot of that is due, the federal government says, we want to make sure that you do it right. We want to make sure that it goes to the right people. There's no corruption. There's no ways the money can be misused. And indeed, there's a big penalty if you do. You have to pay it back. So I think it's a tough chore. And I believe that the Office of Community Development has done a good job of trying to set up the parameters, the process. And it's just no way that process works quickly. And hopefully it will start working in the next several months. Your money will start showing up, right, and perhaps we'll move to another debate.
Here's an email from Steve Winnem, former budget director under Governor Romer. He says, I believe the key to public support for any progress is building public confidence in the state's ability to manage services effectively. As long as they are subjected to almost daily reports to the contrary, people will never trust government. The governor needs to set the example by holding his appointees accountable for catching wasteful practices and eliminating them and publicizing his efforts. John?
I couldn't agree more with Mr. Winnem. I mean, those of us who favor a more robust role for government in providing a safety net for people and providing for more education and social services need to be extremely vigilant about the waste that we sometimes see in government. There's no excuse for wasting taxpayer dollars. We know it happens. It happens in Republican and Democratic administrations, and I think that a dollar spent to try to rein in that waste or if there's fraud or abuse in government is something that should be a priority. And I think you're right. That's the key. You're never going to completely eliminate it in government, but I think you can reduce it, and I think you can show people that you're serious about fighting it, and hopefully that will restore some confidence.
Here's a question for Dr. Richardson from Scott. He asks, what are the chances of ending the corporate subsidy the state is spending on the business inventory tax credit? Jim?
Basically, the task force recommended that we get rid of, that we eliminate that credit over 5 years. Well, we also said the inventory tax itself is not a very good tax, and that's the local tax, really. We said we needed to eliminate that over 10 years, and then that would be put the burden on somebody else. I think right now the odds of getting rid of that particular credit are very small. I think they will be cut back, trimmed, but I don't think it will be eliminated.
Well, we thank you for joining us today, and it should be a lively 60 days. It opens today at 1 p.m. The governor will address lawmakers, and WRKF will air the governor's opening address for the session. Thank you, Jim Richardson, and
thank you,
Jan Mohr. Always a pleasure.
Thank you.
Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.